Thanks for listening to Exploring the Wine Glass podcast, the podcast for people who love wine. I'm Lori Budd, a UC Davis winemaking program and WSET Level 2 graduate. You can find Exploring the Wine Glass on all the socials as well as your favorite podcast catchers. If you haven't subscribed yet, now's the perfect time. I promise I'll never tell you what to drink, but I'll always share what's in my glass. Welcome back to Wine for Bet Street. Today, Almo's letter of the day is Y, and he is talking about the Yarra Valley in Australia. The region is named after the river that originates approximately 90 kilometers east of the Melbourne Central Business District and flows towards it and out into Port Phillip Bay. The name Yarra Valley is used in reference to the upper regions surrounding the Yarra River and generally does not encompass the lower regions, including the city and suburban areas. So unscrew, uncork, or saber a bottle and enjoy this episode of Wine for Bet Street. We'll give you the history, general characteristics, food pairings, and leave you with some facts to take away with you about the Yarra Valley. Have you had Yarra Valley wines? Send us a message and let us know. Sláinte!
We're live.
Hi.
Hi.
Happy Monday.
Yeah.
Happy Wine for Bet Street. Happy Wine for Bet Street Monday. We're going to talk wine. But before we get into anything, we are going to drink wine because I need wine today after what social media is doing
today. So what is your wine?
So my wine is this guy here, which is Innocent Bystander, and it is a Pinot Noir. So what do you have?
I got Shoofly.
Shoofly. Also a Pinot. Also a Pinot.
Pinot Noir.
There is a, and that is to be well expected from the Yarra Valley.
Yeah.
That is
to be. It's a cool climate region.
Yes. So
Pinot Noirs and Chardonnays.
Yep. All right, so here's my favorite sound ever. And this is...
What year is yours?
That's what I just was looking up. I think it's a 2017, I think it is.
Mine's 16.
Because I think online they said it was a 16, but Mike called me. Yeah, mine's a 17. Mike called me and said, you told me 16. Does it matter the vintage? I'm like, no. So mine's 17.
Oh, I didn't care. I said, I just needed a wine from the Yarra Valley. I didn't care what it was.
Yeah. So this is like super light.
Mine is a little, it's not super light.
If I was looking at it, if I was doing a blind tasting, I would go to Pinot right off the bat by the color.
I would know it was a Pinot, yeah.
Yeah. But it's a little on the garnet side.
Mine's got more plum looking.
Yeah, all right. All right, so, Sláinte.
Cheers. Oh, look at you. You got the stemless now, and I got the stem.
California living, we're stemless here. Mostly because we did have stemmed glasses, and every time I come back to California, we've got less of them. Mike keeps breaking them.
So, well, I went and grabbed a glass, and I'm like, I'm going with this. This is a nice Pinot-esque
glass. Yes. Yes. All right. So let's bring out Elmo. Welcome to the Yarra Valley.
I'm Deborah Aquindo. I'm known as the Hudson Valley Wine Goddess. I'm a wine blogger, a wine writer, and I am co-owner of a restaurant in Stone Harbor, New Jersey, called Kitchen 330. And I am an author of Tapping the Hudson Valley, Day Trips and Weekend Itineraries to the Hudson Valley. And I'm co-owner of Happy Bitch Wines. And am I missing something?
I can't keep up with myself these days. I know. You are super busy. No, I think you've hit it all.
All right. So, and that's me in a nutshell. All right, you're on.
So me in a nutshell, I'm Lori. My husband and I own Dracena Wines. Specializing in Cabernet Franc from the Paso Robles District. We just did our final blending for our 2017 Cabernet Franc, so that will be going to bottle at the end of July, beginning of August. I am founder of Cab Franc Day, and I have now started the blog and podcast have been separated to Exploring the Wine Glass. So you can find me on all of the social channels under Exploring the Wine Glass, which is, podcast and blog related, or Dracena Wines, which is all about Paso Robles wines. And I think that's about it for me. So let's get into the history of the Yarra Valley.
The Yarra Valley is located just outside of Melbourne. It's about 90 minutes outside Melbourne. And it was once occupied by I can't even pronounce this. I always have these, you know me, I can't pronounce anything. Wurundjeri, who take their name from the Wurrung language, the word Wurrung meaning mana gum. So the Wurundjeri are witchetty grub people. And they were there long before the European settlers established themselves in the 1930s. So the Yarra River runs through the valley. And the Yarra River, Barungung, as it's known to the indigenous Wurundjeri people, means place of mist and shadows.
Ooh.
And the stories say that the Yarra River was etched into the landscape by the ancestral creator spirit, Bunjo, and that is the wedge-tail eagle.
That's interesting because the Finger Lakes have been carved in by whatever god there was then, and the other lakes are by the god. It's every region almost has their religious lore, and these rivers are all, you know, handprints or claw filings or something of their gods.
Right. And I'm sure I'm pronouncing the native, and I apologize, the native Wurundjeri's. I know I'm pronouncing that incorrectly, so I apologize. So in the 1950s, Yarra Valley was on the route to the goldfields of Warburton and the center of the timber industry going back into the 1890s, it was the center of the timber industry. And the region evolved as the primary food production region for Melbourne. And this is actually an old gold cave.
Oh.
Where they would go and, you know, look for gold and stuff.
They need to board that up better because people like me would be going in there.
Yeah, you're not kidding. So the Yarra Valley is Victoria's first wine growing district, and it dates back 180 years. The first vines were planted in 1838 by the Rye brothers on what is known today as Chateau Yering. The first vineyard known as Yering Station produced the first Yarra Valley wine in 1845, and it was made by James Dardell. And then in 1950, it was sold to Paul de Castella. And Paul's favorite, this is really interesting. So Paul's favorite drink was Pommard, a Burgundy, Pinot Noir. And he didn't really have an interest at all in planting or making wine. And one evening, so he was a very wealthy person. So one evening, the servant announced that there was no more Pommard left. So what did we do? Oh my gosh, panic stricken. Everyone was really angry, and the servant himself had worked on the rye vine plantings, and he appeared with a jug from the rye plantings of the rye wine, and he poured it, and everybody absolutely loved it. And it was at that point when Paul decided that the vineyard and the and everything must be expanded.
Okay.
So Paul's brother, the Baron Julien du Perry, joined him, and started. They started to export the local wines to the British and the European markets. And in 1889, the Yearning Station was the only wine from the Southern Hemisphere to win a Grand Prix, which would be a medal, at the Paris Expedition.
Oh, wow.
And then in 1921, and this is where it gets kind of sad. In 1921, the wine production ceased in the Yarra Valley. Demand for fortified wine increased, economic depression, and adverse natural conditions took place. And in 1937, you saw a lot of the vineyards convert to pasture and cows and, you know, all that stuff. And then replanting began in 1963 when Reg Egan replanted vines and established Wantira Estate. And then Dr. Caritas, who had a doctorate in plant physiology from Oxford, he made the first commercial vineyard in the region after 50 years in 1973. And he became known for its bold, unique, and charismatic wines. And he was an innovator in the vineyard planting in unirrigated, low-yielding, unirrigated soil, low-yielding vines during a time of high yields and irrigation. And his pursuit of high-quality, cool-climate vine styles became the hallmark of the Yarra Valley and actually played a role in the evolution of Australia's wine over the last 20 years. They saw a lot of development down under in the Yarra Valley. Moët established their Australian base in 1996. Domaine Chardon established Coldstream. And I was really looking for, like, Coldstream, because that would have been way cool. In 1989, the Yearning Station, Victoria's first vineyard, was replanted, and the original buildings on the site were restored. And between 1990 and 2000, there were 40 new wineries established in the Yarra Valley. In 2006, the first operational Yarra Valley winery opened in Town Center. They had, like, a and that's where Giant Steps Innocent Bystander came to. So it's fairly, Innocent Bystander is fairly a young wine.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Yarra Valley is considered to be one of the pioneer areas for development of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay in Australia. With the hilly region and the variation of altitude, it creates different climates and exposure. And this allows many varieties to excel. And today, the focus on site expression and fruit purity. Chardonnay and Pinot Noir are considered the royalty of the Yarra Valley, but they do produce Cabernet Sauvignon and Shiraz. They also thrive in the lower, warmer sites in the region. But they're pretty much a cool climate region, and they're right now experimenting with other grapes like Nebbiolo, Arnaz, Gamay, and Gruner. Harvest, you know, they're kind of the reverse as us.
Right.
So harvest takes place mid-February with Pinot Noir and finishes in April with Cabernet Sauvignon. And it's very similar to our harvest September through November. And it's today it's one of the world's leading cool climate wine growing regions, producing classic style wines in many varieties. And it's also Victoria's premier food and wine tourism destination. So that's what I got on the history.
All right. We are moving on to general characteristics. Okay, so the Yarra Valley is named after, as you said, the Yarra River that runs throughout the region. It begins at about 90 kilometers east of Melbourne City. And if you have a river, you need to have a mouth that you open up into a larger part of water. And that mouth feeds into the Port Phillip Bay. So since the topography of the region varies immensely, obviously so do the soil types. So there are two basic soil types that are in the area. The traditional areas on the northern side of the valley are gray to gray brown in color, and on the surface range from loamy sand to clay loam, and in consistency with the red brown clay subsoils. Frequently, these soils are frequently impregnated with rock, so it's not easy digging in there. There's quite a bit of rock in the region. Most are relatively acidic and low in fertility, but generally these types of soils drain very well. The other major soil type is like beautiful. I have never seen anything like this in real person, and I would love it. But the other major soil type is much younger in origin, and it crumbles extremely easily. It is brightly red-colored volcanic soil. So this immensely deep...
Wow, that's beautiful.
Right? So the immensely deep and fertile soil is found predominantly in Seville, Hoddle's Creek, and elsewhere on the southern, so the Warburton side of the valley. So the northern side has the soil we're used to seeing, those clays and the loam, and then the southern side has this red volcanic soil. So obviously the wines from those regions are going to be extremely different. The Yarra Valley is relatively cooler in relation to rest of Australia's viticultural regions. So the region is actually cooler than Bordeaux, but warmer than Burgundy. And you can see this by the longitude and latitude, right? So Yarra Valley is south, where the other two are north, okay? But by their latitude and longitude, you can see how their temperatures are going to vary. And as anybody who has studied any bit of wine, one of the things that you should know is that the majority of the wine regions are all located between the 30 and 50 degrees latitude, of which they are. Right? So we're 37 to 47. So they are, all three of those are falling within there. In the Yarra Valley, the vineyard elevations vary from about 50 meters to 430 meters above sea level. Rainfall is winter and spring dominant. With the summer, it's relatively cool, dry, and humid. There is limited maritime influence. There is only a small diurnal temperature change, and that is directly linked to the proximity of the Southern Ocean. So the Yarra Valley is in the Southern Hemisphere, like you mentioned. So harvest is typically commences in mid-February with the Pinot, and Cabernet Sauvignon is usually the last one to be brought in April, and everything is flip-flopped, right? So the Northern Hemisphere, you think September to November. Frost is rarely a problem, but it can affect those lowest vineyards, those 50 meters above sea level vineyards, but it's really not a concern for them. With a 7-month growing season and a rainfall of only like 750 to 950 millimeters of rain, and usually it's on the lower end than the higher end, so much closer to the 750 than the 950. The restricted water holding capacity in some soils, irrigation is absolutely positively required. They need to irrigate their vines. Although the extent of it does vary between producer to, from producer to producer. Pinot Noir is the grape variety that produces the most sought after red wines from the Yarra Valley and produces the greatest diversity of flavors and styles. Now, this is a little bit geeky, so I kind of apologize, but I found it fascinating. So the cooler vineyard sites have the earlier picking, and the richer volcanic soils all contribute to producing more of the perfumed style Pinot Noirs in the area. So those Pinots from those areas, from the cooler vineyard sites, are not so much about the body, but instead the delicacy and the restraint that they're going to have. Styles that are more closely identified with fruit from the warmer parts of the Yarra Valley, and perhaps because of winemaking methods, they are more focused on pulling everything out of the skins in those areas. So, you can do a gentler press, and that's really not what in the cooler areas, they're looking to do a gentler press. In these warmer areas, the winemakers are more apt to get everything and anything they can out of it. So it's going to be a more harsher press. The soils are likely to be clay and loam over sedimentary rock. So the base of the hills and the ranges vineyards have these alluvial deposits. So warmer weather, if you're looking for Pinots from the Yarra Valley, if you're looking at the warmer vineyard sites, they're going to be bigger and bolder Pinots. Whereas if you take the cooler vineyard sites, it's going to be more delicate and more aromatic. So granite is really not common at all in the Yarra Valley, but if you can find a vineyard site that has granite soil, granite soils, these are going to produce that mineral, that bone-dry, fine minerality Pinots that truly are the giving you that earth and that mineral sensation that a lot of Pinots or Pinot lovers are looking for. In addition to Cabernet Sauvignon, they do produce Cabernet Sauvignon, Cab Blends, and Syrah or Shiraz. But Pinot is by far the number one red. Now, on the other spectrum, right, wherever there is Pinot, there is Chardonnay. Okay? These wines are much lighter in weight and much less oaky than the older style of Australian Chardonnays. So back, years ago, the winemakers really were trying to make big, bold, hefty Chardonnays. And as the time has come through, what happened was the people didn't want them anymore. They were going by the wayside. So the winemakers have changed their winemaking styles, and they're now trying to have less impact or less influence from the oak and allowing you to actually taste the grapes that are there. So the wines are made from grapes that are typically picked at a lower level of sugar ripeness and a higher level of acid. The aromas and flavors are much more citrus. So you're thinking early harvest, you're thinking stone fruits, minerals, floral essences. Warmer sites in the Yarra Valley, those at the lower altitudes tend to produce fruit that have a tendency to favor the bigger and richer style. In those areas, you're going to have a higher oak influence, and you're going to have riper stone fruit flavors. In addition to the Chardonnay, they also produce Sauvignon Blanc and Pinot Gris or Pinot Grigio. So that is what you can expect from the wines of the Yarra Valley. So very important.
I do have a question, and I don't know the answer to it, to be quite honest. He wants to know what percentage of the world's production of wine comes from 30 to 50 degree latitude.
Oh, it's like 98%. That's just where everything is. You have the few outliers, but it's way up there. That's what we learned at WSET. For every rule, there's the exception of the rule, but between that 30 and 50, it's definitely the majority. You're in the 90s percents of wine regions. So, all right.
Let's talk about our wines?
Yes.
We're kind of enjoying this.
So we're flip-flop from last month.
I'm kind of liking this shoe fly. This actually, I'll be honest, the Pinot tastes like a lot of Oregon Pinots.
Oh, this does not.
No?
No. All right. So
this
let's
has
do
a little
it.
Spice on the finish.
No. This has... No.
Yours is a lot darker than mine.
Mine is very garnet. Mine is very garnet. It's a light garnet, but it's a garnet. This has plum. So it's kind of dark fruit focused. But there's a little bit of, I don't want to say smoke braised meat type of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's very unilateral. It's just like, there's not much coming out of the nose. So it's definitely, you know, in terms of intensity, it's a low aroma.
I get a lot of cherry.
Michael has got it spot on. It's bitter. It's
really?
When it's on your palate, it kind of separates on the palate, and it has a finish that just leaves a bitterness to it. Michael, I would say spice on a little bit on the nose, but not a typical Pinot spice.
This is really good.
Cardamom.
Cherry, spice, and it's got like hints of black pepper on the finish.
No, and no cherry.
I'm really liking this.
There you go. No, there's no cherry on this. This is a dark fruit. I wouldn't say cherry at all.
I get, you know, cherry. I'm really liking it. Mine's really nice.
It's actually rather, I would say, medium minus in body. The tannin, medium minus. The acidity.
I got a bit of acidity.
Yeah, there's actually quite a bit of acidity on it. But there's just this bitter, like if you bit into a zest, you know, into a rind. You bit into a rind.
Hardly any fruit. Never had a Pinot Noir like this.
Right.
I'm liking mine.
Yeah.
Isn't there a song about shoe fly, don't fly with me?
Yeah,
like
shoe
that?
Fly. I don't know. There's a brewery, this, shoe fly.
I'm really liking this. It's got nice fruit. It's got nice spice.
Yeah, this.
It's nice.
This is pretty much unidimensional. I'm making up my own words.
What a switch. The past two times you've had the winter wine.
Yeah. It's very unidimensional. It's plum on the nose, and then on the palate, it's like literally biting into a rind of something. It's like, ooh.
I got cherry and strawberry on the nose. I mean, it's got a, you know, nice aroma.
Yeah. Michael is agreeing with me. He's like, or, you know, unidimensional or flat. It's just there. You know how when you're learning, you know, light or medium bodied or whatever,
right,
and they say, you know, oh, compare it to the milks, you know? This is just like milk. Like, it's just there. There's no flavor. Yeah. There's
nothing. Mine
is light
bodied. It's not, you know, I can't say it's medium. But
I would go the 2% nice. Milk. 2% milk for this.
It's nice. It really is.
That's good.
Well,
that's
Michael
good.
Said sour
milk. Michael is digging this as much as I am.
And I'm liking mine, so go find some shoe fly.
All right.
And I can tell you, though, I looked up shoe fly, you know, I looked it up on the web, and they don't really go into detail, to be honest with you, about the wine. It was founded in 2003, and they talk about their winemaking team, Ben Riggs, who's a native of McLaren Vale. They do source all their fruit from various vineyards, but they really didn't go into, like, if there's, you know, who really owns it and who's the passion behind it.
Yeah.
Which I was kind of disappointed. There was very little about it.
So the first thing I have written about my wine is really weird website. It talks about itself as an object. So it doesn't say, you know, innocent bystander, blah, 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 blah. It just said, it uses it. So it instead of the winemaker's name or the winery's name. So its history dates back 100 years. Its true wine is that, you know, like it's historical. I take that back. So they started about 100 years ago, and it was the Chardonnay, like how I was mentioning how the old Chardonnay of the Yarra Valley was this big bowl, yep. Right? And now it recently they started to rejuvenate and make more sense of the world's Chardonnay. So within the last 15 years, apparently Innocent Bystander Chardonnay has really helped them progress. So, because according to them, it is because of the Chardonnay's past 15 years that really has made Innocent Bystander become something. It prides themselves on the Pinot and Chard of the region. They have a cool mountainside vineyards and warmer valley floor sites, and they pick from all of these regions to provide the complexity of the flavors, which this does not have. So they do also source their fruit from other wine regions. So they make a King Valley Prosecco and Pinot Gris. They make a Swan Hill Moscato and a Tempranillo from Heathcote. And according to them, they do not believe in overworking their wines. So that is what I have. Now, according to what other people are tasting, this, and Michael, you're going to laugh at this. It's supposed to have flavors of, according to them, I should say, it's supposed to have flavors of dark cocoa powder, poached cherries, truffle, and fresh tobacco. And then they say the palate is ripe cherries and cherry compote. And I get none of that. There is not a drop of chocolate essence, you know, aroma, palate, 17.
Mine's 16.
It's plum on the nose and just discombobulated acid and tannin on the palate.
That's too bad.
But you know what? I'm 2 for 3 over the last 3 months, so I'll take it.
Well, I'm 1 for 1.
1 for 3. And now a word from our sponsor. Exploring the Wine Glass is brought to you by Dracena Wines. Dracena Wines is an artisan winery located in Paso Robles, California. They have been producing wine since 2013. Their first vintage began with one wine, their classic Cabernet Franc, which received a 91 in Wine Enthusiast. Since then, they have increased production, received several accolades, including double gold medals in the San Francisco Chronicle Wine Competition, and consistent 90-plus ratings. In addition to their classic Cabernet Franc, they now produce a single vineyard, single clone reserve Cabernet Franc, and a rosé of Syrah. Although they've increased production every year, they continue to sell out each vintage. Find out more about Dracena Wines and their award-winning wines at DracenaWines.com and let them help turn your moments into great memories.
Shall we go into food pairings?
Sure.
Wait till you see this.
I have this in my hand and I don't even really want to take another sip.
Oh, I want to pour you a glass of wine.
That's what I wanted to do last month.
This is really nice.
That's what I wanted to do with my Zeno Mauro.
I'm really enjoying this. And, you know, when we're done, I might just like
finish that bottle. I mean, there you go.
I don't know. That'll be 3 for 3 for today. So for the food pairings, I'm going to tell you, I went native Australia.
Okay.
So instead of, you know, in Australia, they make wines. You know, you got your Pinot Noirs and you've got your Chardonnays. And
is anything served on a boomerang?
No.
No? Okay.
But I wanted to, you know, so you can get your basic pairings with the Pinot Noirs and the Chardonnays. But I went to the country of origin for this. So we have an Emu and Marigold Greens salad. Yes. Emu actually has a lot of iron content, and it's fat-free and low in cholesterol. And the Australian native animal works well when smoked and served cold or as on a pizza topping. And they also do, like, beef pies with the emu. And they smoke it. And
Okay, you have emu this month.
This is an emu salad.
I guess that's better than the squirrel I was recommending last month.
And here we have a kangaroo.
Oh, come on!
Dark ale pie.
No wonder why the kangaroos punch people.
Oh, wait, I gotta go back to the emu. The emu goes well with a Cab Shiraz blend.
Okay.
Let me go back to the emu.
I've fed emus. I don't ever want to kill an emu.
So this goes well with a Cabernet and Shiraz blend.
Okay.
So then we have the kangaroo mushroom and dark ale. Pie, that goes really well with the Shiraz. And they do grow Shiraz in the Yarra Valley. And then we have a grilled lime and garlic balmain bugs. So they're similar to lobster. Lori, they're similar to lobster. Don't get grossed out.
It actually, they look like shrimp. They're kind of curled.
They're a species of a slipper lobster that lives in the shallow waters around Australia. And they have no claws, and they only have the shell, the tail. So this would taste good with Chardonnay. And we have barbecue snags. Snags are like sausages.
Okay,
and they go really well with Shiraz. Hey, I dug deep here into the native things.
You did.
Braised wallaby shanks.
Wallaby.
And they have a delicate flavor, and they're less than 1% fat. They're very lean, and they go great with Pinot Noir. And I can see that going well with Pinot Noir. Lemon myrtle crusted.
Oh, you're killing me.
And this will go good with a Chardonnay or a Gruner. Crocodile is low in fat and high in protein. And you cook it similar to the way you cook pork and chicken. And it tastes great when it's grilled. And it's moist but bland, so you need to season it well.
Sure, it's not an alligator?
Crocodile. And we have macadamia crusted barramundi with a pineapple slaw. And barramundi is, a fish. I actually have heard about it in the restaurant. And it'll go well with the Chardonnay. So those are native foods to Australia. Did I totally ruin your appetite?
Oh, my God. That's horrible. That is so.
I'm liking this Pinot. Do you want some?
I do. Wouldn't that be awesome if I could just put my glass up here? And if you could pour it right in there.
There you go.
That would be so awesome. Oh, my God. I'm going to have nightmares of those foods attacking me. All right. No boomerang, so I'm kind of upset. All right.
You got kangaroo, though.
Yeah.
An alligator. Emu.
I know. That's just strange stuff right there. Strange stuff. All right. So we're going to move on from those wonderful food pairings. And you know what? Not sad, but there's probably restaurants around here in the big cities that make all of those dishes, I'm sure. But we are going to move on to fast facts about the Yarra Valley. Mine are nowhere near as interesting as those food dishes. All right, fact number one. The Yarra Valley is located just 50 kilometers from Melbourne, which is the closest towns being Yarra Glen and Lilydale. Fact number two, the Yarra Valley is considered a cool climate region. The temperature is usually mild and consistent. The spring is the wettest time with the most rain falling during the month. The cooler months also see considerable rainfall. The summers are actually very dry. Fact number three, the Yarra Valley has a population of around 40,000 people. So I really didn't know if that was a lot of people or not a lot of people. So I 40, did
40,000? That's, I don't know.
Yeah, I had no clue, so I did a comparison to Bordeaux. Let's play a little game. How many people do you think live in Bordeaux?
How many? I have no idea.
More or less?
Do, no idea. Probably less.
279,000 people live in Bordeaux.
Wow.
So apparently the Yarra Valley does not have a lot of people in it. I'm guessing, you know, it's pretty spread out. I think it's very, you know, not so densely populated. Okay, fact number four. If you are going to visit, some important road rules in Australia. First, you are driving on the left, which apparently, I thought this was kind of a cool thing, like, it shows you how many people or what countries drive on the left versus the right type thing. So you are going to drive on the left in Australia. You must stick to the speed limit. You have to carry your driver's license and wear a seatbelt. And the blood alcohol limit is 0.05. And at all times, not just holidays, at all times, there are random breath and speed tests taking place, and the fines are extremely hefty if you get caught. So 0.05, that's pretty much don't even have a sip of wine. Like, don't even have a sip of wine. And fact number five, the two best known varietals for the Yarra Valley are Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, although there are others that are increasing in popularity. There's your Fast Five Facts.
Posted the total population of France, 67 million, and the population of Australia is 24.6 million.
Wow. Well, thank you for that point, for those numbers, Michael. That's a huge, huge difference.
Yeah, that's a third.
Yeah. You know, I mean, when you go to France, it's definitely a densely populated area. But I guess Australia, I've never been there, but I guess Australia
is just... I've never been there, but I had family there.
Always widespread.
Yeah, I have family down, you know, in Sydney.
Oh, well, but what are we waiting for?
I know, I gotta go before they die. Sorry, Judy. Sorry. She's, because my aunt, my great aunt died a couple years back. And so Judy's down there, so... I've got to go before her time is up.
Yeah, I sense a girls' trip coming on.
Let's go.
All right.
And we'll do one that's straight from Australia. How cool
awesome
is that?
Would that be? Yes.
How about when you retire?
All right.
Time. We'll
can
go
that
down.
Be my, can that be my retirement present to myself?
Yeah, we'll go.
All right, cool.
All absolutely. Right, look out, Australia.
Why absolutely, Michael, plus one. Come
what
on along.
2021?
2021, yep.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, not all too right. far. So, Debbie, tell us about next month's Wine for Bet Street.
So, next month's Wine for Bet Street, and I'm going to give you the link. It's going to be Zinfandel.
I cannot believe we're at Z.
How long have we been doing this?
26 months.
Yeah. 2 years. We've been doing this for 2 years?
2 years and 2 months.
Shit, that's a long time.
I know. It feels like yesterday we just said, hey, doesn't it feel like yesterday I said,
like, sure, I'll do this with
I have
you.
This idea. Who wants to join me?
I'm like, sure, I'll do this with you.
Yeah.
And
we'll really have to celebrate next month with Zinfandel, mm-hmm. which is honestly one of my favorite grape varietals ever. Mike and I have loved Zinfandel for a long time. Before Zinfandel was cool to love, we have loved Zinfandel.
Yeah, I always liked Zinfandel.
And we've seen it come kind of full circle. When we liked it, it was somewhat tame. You know, it was decent. And then it started going up and, you know, it was blow your, you know, palate away, Zinfandel. And now it's back to kind of...
There's different, you know what, different areas have different types of Zinfandel. There's the more austere and then there's the fruit forward.
Right.
I actually have two Zinfandels for next time, like comparable, like, oh my gosh.
Side by side?
Yeah. I have a 2000, I have to go, it looks, it's behind me, but I do have a vertical.
You have a vertical. Okay, so a vertical.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I actually just bought four Zinfandels this week while I was in Paso. I was down in Paso twice this week, and I bought Zinfandel both times while I was down there. So I will probably...
Oh, thank you, Michael. Thank you so much.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you.
He said, by the way, this is one of the best podcasts or whatever, and I enjoy living daylight out of this. Thank you both. And I think so many people could learn and appreciate the wine world and you too. Thanks again.
Thank you so much, Michael. That like warms our hearts. It really does. And yeah. I'm going to do a little favor then. If you can... rate and review us in the podcast.
On each of our podcasts, because I know you have your podcast thing and I've got my podcast thing.
And iTunes just loves to see reviews and we get pushed up the chart of allowing other people to find us if people provide reviews for us, which is
How that works?
That's how it works. And it's really kind of stupid because there's podcasts that pop up that aren't even podcasts anymore. But because they had reviews back in the day, they're still there. So as people can give reviews, it really does help other people find us. And it does nothing for us. We don't get money for it. We don't do anything. All it does is if you go to iTunes and you type in wine, the Hudson Valley Wine Goddess or Exploring the Wine Glass will pop up as a podcast you would like. And that helps other people find us. So... any and all reviews are greatly appreciated.
So I guess we'll see everybody next month when we go and talk about Zinfandel.
Yes. I'm excited because...
I am too.
I already know I'm going to love my Zinfandel because I tasted it before I purchased it.
Oh, I didn't. I have, like I said, I have a vertical tasting I have not tasted.
All right. That's awesome.
I might have the Corvan these, so...
Okay. And then I think, in all honesty, I think we might take a little break in September and regroup.
Regroup
for season two.
For season two
and see how we go about it. I'm thinking more regions than varieties, but Debbie and I will talk about that off mic.
Yeah, that might be the weekend that we need, Jewish holiday, if you have off and come down.
See, yeah. So we might be taking September off to regroup and come up with season two. So if you guys have any suggestions of how you would like to see season two get organized, please let us know. Oh, yes, Michael, we will definitely be going through the alphabet again. We will be starting with A once again. So we will see you. Debbie, I don't know if you ever said the date.
August 19th.
All right. August 19th it is. Sláinte.
Thank you, everybody. Cheers.
This has been another episode of Exploring the Wine Glass. Thanks for listening. If you have suggestions on what topics you would like me to discuss, please reach out on social media. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as Exploring the Wine Glass. I'm also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd. Of course, you can always email me at exploringthewineglass@gmail.com. If you enjoyed our podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast catcher to help others find me more easily. Until next week, sláinte.